Yo. Educated Guest Podcast.
Here's a little story that must be told.
It's episode 32, y'all. It's your boy at Zaref at Ed Guest Podcast on them Twitters. You got to get at us. So today's episode features a classroom teacher. We always like to get back down to the nitty gritty. Even after a short amount of time of 5 years, she's so well respected in the district. She speaks to audiences about young women in science. She gives workshops on mastery-based grading. She does seat-perch robotics after school. But you know what? The reason why we love her so much on this podcast is that she's a risk taker. She's not afraid to try something new, something different, and she's not afraid to fail forward. So today's episode is an honest picture of what hard work and love look like in practice. I can't wait for you to get this in your system. Without further ado, we bring you Alicia Johal. Come with it.
You like that? Ready? Everybody's like, what?
I thought you two were going to start rapping.
Not yet. That's an hour two.
Okay. Oh, how long is this? What did I sign up for?
It's like a 6-hour show, dude. It's a marathon show.
Did you bring your slippers?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Educated Guest Podcast,
episode 32.
We have a special, special guest in the house tonight.
Special.
Super special.
Super special. Introduce yourself first, though, sir.
My name is Mr. A-Y-Y-Y.
Forgot the underscore.
There's an underscore in there on them Twitters.
Mm-hmm.
And you are, sir?
Caesar Does It.
Easy. Mm-hmm. At Caesar Does It on them Twitters.
That's right.
And you, hold on. I think congratulations are in order.
You really going to do this right now?
Just right now, because I think it's kind of one of those things where, as of the recording of the show, you have a new gig. Don't you?
I do have a new job.
Holy guacamole.
The students at Otay Ranch, some of them, most of them will be sad to know that I am no longer going to teach IM3 or compacted at Otay Ranch.
Ooh.
I am taking my talents west to the district office.
What are you going to be doing, dude?
I will be the new champion of after school
whoop, whoop.
For the district.
You go, see.
So if you've ever listened to episodes 1 through 30...
You've heard something about after school program.
You've heard just a little bit about after school. I'm going to now be that guy.
You're going to be that dick.
Hey.
We could actually do that after school, too.
After school is the Petri dish.
We could do it, guys. We could change the world.
So, yeah.
So that's you. That's your new gig.
I appreciate the congratulations. You had a little something to do with it. A lot of love you showed me.
I didn't do anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm.
My name's Minute and I ain't in it.
Okay.
You got that all on your own. All
right. So... Our guest is super easy to find on them Twitters.
Yeah, she has like 6,000 followers.
2,000.
Easy.
I got my 2,000th follower today. I may have noticed.
Ooh.
Okay, so should we shout him out right now? Should you shout out, find out who your 2,000th follower is?
Oh, I don't know who it was.
It was the Educated Guest Podcast.
Actually, I followed you guys today, too.
I saw that. I saw that.
We're not important, guys. We're not important.
So find our guest.
I'm honored.
What's your handle?
Alicia Johal.
J-O-H-A-L?
Yes.
Sick.
That's right.
That is what I am.
Alicia, we've known each other for about 5 years?
Six.
6 years. Okay. 6 years. And so why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Tell us who you are really quickly, and then we'll get into some good questions about...
Mm-hmm.
What makes you bitter and what makes you excited about being a good teacher? I'm just kidding. We're just going to start talking shit at some point. But
that's what I was told I was called here to do.
Yeah.
We're going to pull
the gloves off a little later, but I think initially we'll just play the getting to know you game.
Okay, what do you want to know?
Tell us about your journey through education. Where did you go to school in your formative years, and what teachers made a difference to you?
Okay. I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Vancouver, Canada.
She's Canadian.
I'm a dual citizen.
Dual citizen.
Make sure everyone knows I'm a citizen here.
Oh, words.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
I have American citizenship.
Deal.
All right, so Vancouver.
For the record.
Vancouver. That's where I was born and raised until I was in seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved here to Oceanside, California. Not that we're in Oceanside right now, but here.
Yeah.
To San Diego. So I did middle school here, high school here, college here, grad school here. And
so high school,
I'm teaching here.
High school, middle school,
Oceanside
where?
High. Okay, Jefferson so. Middle School.
Jefferson
Middle School. For half of seventh grade. So I moved in January. So I did like a semester of middle school, seventh grade, 1 year of eighth grade, and then 4 years at Oceanside High. And then I went to UCSD for college. I was a biology major.
Whoop.
That's all I'm going to say about UCSD.
That's it. Not much
that's
else.
All they get. They took enough from me. That's all they get.
So in any of those years, Vancouver or Oceanside, were there any teachers that made a big impression on
Never.
You?
No, I'm kidding. There was...
Long pause.
She goes, wait a minute.
The fact that there's a long pause is a testament to why I'm a teacher, right? That's why.
Because you're trying to figure out which teacher.
Which teacher?
Because there are so many.
So actually it was in college where I think I had my best teacher ever.
Okay.
It was an upper div biology class. His name was Dr. Guiara, and he taught, 200-300 kids, but had every single person engaged for 2 hours every time. So in that moment, in that class, I realized I needed to be a science teacher. That's why he's the big one. We talked a lot in that class to each other. We did skits to explain biology. We drew all of our notes. We didn't write our notes. We had to get up in front of the class and explain stuff. He was super easy to talk to, had a bunch of office hours, so you could go in and ask for help. So he was like everything that a good teacher is at the college level, which is not the norm. Good, solid teaching. Yeah. And then I was like, I'm 21 years old and I just found out I love science because of this guy. And I was happy, but I was pissed because I was like, I should have known this when I was 12 or 7 or 16.
Right.
So that's when I knew I needed to be a science teacher.
That's amazing because everything I see you doing, and I only see it online, to be honest with you, but everything I see you doing with the kids is exactly that. You're trying to give them that feeling, but... In middle school.
That's the dream. Is that they, even if they don't like become scientists, but that they like it and that they know they can do it. Because I thought science is too hard for me because it was a lot of reading and writing I didn't like it.
Tell me, it was a textbook. Tell me about that struggle then between like when you were first exposed to science and then when you had this revelation of like in college and you had that, I really like it. I'm excited, but I'm pissed. So what was your experience leading up to that in science?
Science was taught out of a textbook. It was, like I said, it was reading, it was writing, memorizing. Memorizing as much as you can all the time. And I wasn't a very good test taker or studier, really. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know how to get science because it was never hands-on. Okay, not never. It was rarely hands-on. You know, we did a few labs here and there in my classes. But it was all note-taking and memorizing and flashcards and multiple-choice tests. I was like, oh, this is not really the subject for me. So I actually left high school loving literature. So I entered UCSD as a journalism major. I was like, I'm going to write because I loved my two AP Lit and AP Language teachers. My English teachers were phenomenal for 4 years. I was like, I could write, I think. And then my parents were like, what are you going to do with a writing degree? What are you paying for? So they panicked a little. And I was like, what am I going to do? And then I kind of went into math and econ for a little bit. And I was like, what am I going to do with an economics degree? I couldn't figure it out. And then that one teacher came into my life.
How was that? How was that conversation? Tell me a little bit more about that conversation. Because I think we all have that conversation with our parents whoever's bringing us up.
And supporting us and paying for us to go to school.
Exactly.
So you can't tell if you don't know my face. I'm Indian. And so as you can imagine, most Indian children are expected to become doctors and lawyers and engineers. And so I was like, Mom, I want to teach.
She's like, wait a minute.
My poor mom. She's so supportive. And so they obviously were the most concerned about, like, are you going to be financially stable if you pick this profession? And so I had to kind of give them some data. I looked up the salary schedules in San Diego. San Diego pays better than most. And I said, I can do this on the side. I can, move up. It won't be forever. I'll try. But then I think as soon as they saw how much I loved it, like that light came, that fulfillment came, then they've just been on board ever since. But up until 21, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be an eye doctor. I was like, oh, if I could wake up every day and help people see, like that's like the best feeling. But now I feel like I do help people see.
Oh, we're dropping gems. We're dropping gems very early in the. We're dropping gems early.
Give me some air.
I help a whole generation to see what's before them.
Right? Oh. So it works. The vision came.
That's what's up.
Yeah. So it's been great. No regrets since. This is 6 years in.
Nice.
And I'm still loving smiling.
Nice.
Loving it. Nice. Happy.
I want to talk to you about one of your tweets.
Everybody goes, which one?
Which one?
It was during one of our breaks. I think it was like during winter break. And we were like 1 week in, and she literally tweets out like, I miss teaching right now.
Right.
Okay,
I've seen this one a couple times when we're on breaks. And she's like, I miss my kids. And I'm sitting there going like, what the fuck?
No. I didn't say I miss the kids. It said I miss teaching.
Oh,
right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I hear or just find out today that you teach an online course at National University, yeah. And then we see all the stuff that you do outside of the regular school day. You fucking work a lot.
Yeah.
Like, how are you not burnt out? Like, what do you do to like take care of yourself?
Confession.
Yeah. Current
confession.
Current status.
I am burnt out.
Okay.
I need a few. Look, I mean, I love our district and this year-round schedule, but I'm not ready to go back next week.
Okay.
I need like a few more weeks. This year, I burnt myself out.
Okay.
No, actually, for the last 5 years, I've burnt myself out. I say yes too much, but I got better about pulling away from things that didn't fulfill me. Like, they're all good things, right? Like, oh, yes, I'll help with that. Yes, I'll help with that. Yes, I'll help with that. But then you get to a point where, like, not everything is, like, yes-worthy. It's like, someone else can do that. So okay. This year, I thought I pulled back more, but then May came around. Not April. April, May came around, and I was like, I'm tired. Yeah. This is hard.
Yeah.
I can't keep going at this rate if I want to keep teaching. So this summer I made a point to, besides teaching a summer school class because I miss teaching for one day. I did it for one day. I didn't take on a whole class. But I like miss, you know, kids and that interaction. I mean, it's so fun. But apart from that, I have not done any lesson planning or any thinking about school because I just need to pull back.
Nice.
So I'm ready to take a break. I'm tired.
I think that's important for some of our younger, our newer teachers to hear,
yeah.
You know, because you're working hard. I see it. And I'm like thinking you're doing okay, but if you're not, you need to say something and they need to hear that too.
Confessions of a fifth grade science. Not fifth, not fifth,
fifth
grade.
Year?
Fifth year science teacher.
After 5 years of pushing hard, you're burnt.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is that when, like, what would be, because I know I've heard it from other sources about like how to regulate what to do. So you're not overwhelmed, but what would you, and I'll share with it after you share yours, but what do you think learning after the 5 years, what are you going to prepare yourself to do going into year six or in the future? How are you going to moderate that?
I don't know if I figured it out.
Nice.
To be honest, like there's things that they all say to do, like don't say yes to everything and have a work-life balance
right.
You know, the eat buzzwords. Healthy, work out, have a life, do fun stuff on the weekend, which I feel like I really did this fifth year, like made a point to like leave work at work on Fridays and not like work all weekend and go crazy. But now that I think about it, I don't know if I put things like actually into practice, you know, consistently.
Yeah.
So I think it's what it is. It's consistency. It's like you have to say, I'm going to have a work-life balance. The whole year. I'm going to eat well the whole year. I'm going to sleep well the whole year. I'm not going to take work home every single weekend. Like there's, because I feel like some weeks I was really good and then some weeks, you know, stuff happens and you take it all home. You convince yourself like, oh, I'm really going
to do this
thing.
Do
it's
this.
Really important. And I have this idea. I have too many ideas. That's the problem. I have like all these ideas and I think that's why I'm tiring myself out because I'm like, oh, this might help all the kids learn every day for the rest of their lives or this might help, so I should try it. So I just like pick up on all these things and I want to try them right away. But that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, but if you keep doing it over and over again, you're not pausing to reflect as much maybe, right. I think,
well,
as you should.
And I would push back just a little bit and see, wondering where is that taking out the most energy or is it the other stuff that you know, other people are asking you to do? Because I know for me, it would be one thing that I learned was Derek Sivers is a entrepreneur and writer, and he talks about the hell yes or no. That's how you decide whether or not you want to do it. If you have a hell yes, I'm like, hell yes, I'm going to do that. Like, hey, Rodrigo, do you want to do this? Hell yeah. If you say anything other than hell yeah, then it's a no. Because at some point it's going to come, like in the future, you see it. Okay. Yeah. Do you want to speak at this conference? Cool. Yeah. That sounds good. And then all of a sudden it gets closer and then, it's in Fresno. It's going to take 2 days. Shout out to Fresno because I'm doing some work out there. But like it's going to take like six hours to get there. I don't have a flight and all this stuff. Like, and it becomes more of a pain in the ass than it is actually like a thing. So it's something that you want to do. So if you say hell yeah to it and you only commit to the things that you really are passionate about and saying hell yeah, then it filters out a lot of things. So I've done that, not consistently, but I've done that for a little bit, and it's helped out. I mean, in terms of like freeing up time, like I have time to write, I have time to do all those things. So maybe it's something
to look podcast into.
time to record with Caesar. Piece of shit.
So you've done a couple of presentations for the district or otherwise, one of them being science standards, grading based on science standards.
Yes, mastery based grading.
Sounds cumbersome. And you're doing it through Jupyter, right?
I'm doing it through Jupyter.
Yeah, can you explain that to us just real quick?
Like pull out Jupyter real quick?
No.
And
Cue it up.
We don't need to do all that.
I'm a little offended right now.
That's great. Okay, so what? Standards? Just kidding. Mastery.
It's not golf. It's not the Masters. It's mastery-based grading.
Tell me more about that.
Is it more time-consuming, and why would teachers want to do it?
It's less time-consuming, and yes, teachers should want to do it because it puts the ownership of grades back on the kids. There's like this sense of, oh, I have complete control over how I'm doing in this class. Not, oh, Miss Jolly gave me a C. Oh, I didn't get that mark. Oh, her tests are so hard. It's all on them. It's in their hands. They can redo things as many times as they need to, which sounds scary as a teacher. Like, oh, I got to grade all that stuff. But they, how do I word this right? They know that they're in control and that I'm not. And when they forget, I remind them that I already passed eighth grade science and that this class is not for me and that it's theirs. And I think that's what it is. It's like a culture thing. It's not even like, the grade book looks way different. No one knows how to understand it except for the kids in my class. But that's all.
That's who matters, right? It's not for another teacher.
The parents ask. I explain it. I have a little letter that goes home. Hey, this is what you're going to see. This is what you should expect. This is what the acronyms mean. Let's do this. And the kids, they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they utilize it and they've taken advantage of it. And my DNF rate has gone way down. And my students that are retaking to master an assignment have gone up. So I'm a happy camper.
Mm.
This is year four.
No.
Year four of some form of standards mastery based grading.
What was year one like?
I did it on my own, I think, that year. I think me and another teacher just did it for like a quarter.
Just to see what it was like.
Piloted.
Oh, I really like this.
Yes. And that's how I got the PLC on board. I was like, hey, look, this is the results are showing that this works. And the data says, and they were on board.
Wow.
And then they jumped on board then the second year. And now we're almost as a... Almost the whole department does it. And so it's been good. And now there's a couple other departments at my school that want to do it. And a couple middle schools who've asked me to come to their PLC and like, hey, can you show us how you did this for science?
And it's not rocket science.
No, there's no letter grades. There's no percentages. There's no points. It's 10 assessments per semester.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes 12. 10 to 12 assessments that link to the 10 or 12 standards I'm required to teach by the state of California, and the student gets MAS for mastery or WIP, work in progress. That's it.
So then how do you transfer that into an actual letter grade?
Good question.
Okay.
So when I do have to assign letter grades, I turn it into a percentage problem. So if there's five assessments at the 6-week grade report,
yeah,
You have 5 out of 5, you have an A. 4 out of 5 is an A. 3 out of 5 is a B. Because it just translated to 90%, 80%, 70%.
Gotcha.
There's also no D's in my class.
Okay.
You fail or you pass with a C higher. And so you get an A, B, C, or an F. That's it.
I've heard that before. I've seen that.
Yeah.
A, B, C, F.
Because what's a D letter?
What is it? What is a D in real life? D's get diplomas, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And so it's worked out quite nicely.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Sounded scary at first, but in 5 minutes you made it sound not so scary.
No,
would you?
I mean,
would
I could
you?
If show you were how to set it up in Jupyter,
well,
and
yeah,
then
if
it's
you
done.
Would, if you would, if you were teaching, would you? Would you try to adopt that for
now? Season? I would. When I first heard her talking about it, it sounded scary. Or when I've seen her tweet about it, I'm just like, "Ooh, that sounds scary." Like,
what are the?
I've seen that option in Jupyter. Like, how?
I don't know.
I've just got my finger over the button. I'm just like, I can't do it.
I'm going to break everything. Piece of shit. What other things did you see on her Twitter feed that kind of you have questions
I feel
about?
I need to be careful what I tweet. They've been referenced multiple times today.
Twice only.
we're watching. We're following.
No. You know what? I think I saw you did a presentation on young ladies, getting young ladies into science,
yeah,
right?
That was my favorite presentation ever. That was my favorite presentation ever because it was a conference.
Give us a little context. Let me be there.
So I was asked to keynote at this conference for young women interested in STEM.
That's what's up.
Nice.
And I was like,
you were asked. They reached out to you.
Dr. Jenny asked me.
Oh, word.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Our superintendent.
Interesting.
So it was
the plot thickens.
Quite the honor.
The plot thickens.
Quite the honor. And so then I asked who my demographic would be, and she said, you know, high school girls interested in the STEM fields, and they'll be from all over Sweetwater, and this is the day. It's a Saturday. So these girls come in 4 or 5 hours, and they just hear from professionals in STEM, educators, doctors, engineers, whatever. And I got to keynote that conference, and we talked about each of those girls. So we worked. It was like a 10-minute keynote, but it was like a working keynote where they had to like do stuff. So they had to figure out their vision, their inspiration, and their purpose in that keynote. And then I said, okay, if you can figure out those three things, then you move forward and you take your next step as a high schooler with that. And so it was really cool. And a lot of high schoolers came up to me after and said, like, I didn't realize that that was my inspiration, or she was my inspiration, or this was my purpose. And so it was nice because how often do kids get to stop and think, like, what is my vision? What is my inspiration? What is my purpose? What is my purpose as a 14-year-old girl sitting in this biology class that I never get called on, and all the boys take over the class, and I'm just like the pretty brown girl in the corner that, you know, is compliant, but I really like science.
Damn,
yeah.
You're unpacking a lot
right now. Yeah. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. Let's start the conversation, girl.
That was the context of the speech. It was a very fulfilling day. I don't know if I've felt like I hit that many before. So it was very nice.
Nice.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's different when you talk to teachers in front of a crowd versus students.
Absolutely.
Much different. And the conversations you have with these young women after, who are like, I want to do this. Can I have your email? Do you think this is possible? And I'm like, yes. All of you, yes. The answer is yes, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Tell us a little bit about that stigma that you just shared about being the brown cute girl in the back,
the who's compliant.
Yeah, brown.
You know who said it first was Chris Emden. I heard it at his PD that he did at our district.
Shout out to Chris Emden,
episode 24.
That man changed my life.
You too.
Did he record right here? Did he sit right here?
No, we were in his hotel room. It was a little weird.
Okay,
well. Not weird, but it was
different.
Well. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if he called it a thing or someone else did, but he said it's like pretty brown girl syndrome. We're in STEM classes, so science, technology, engineering, math classes. You are praised and rewarded for being the quiet, compliant girl who sits there and raises her hand and doesn't get called on and continues to raise her hand. And when she doesn't raise her hand, she still does her work and she turns it in, and she's never late, and she's very polite, and she smiles and she works with everyone. And no matter who you partner with, like, she'll try and she'll do all the work for the group, and then she doesn't realize that science is her subject. Why? Right? Because she's overlooked.
Right.
She's overlooked in the classroom, and that's as young as kindergarten up through 12th grade. You see it.
Right.
our girls of color in our science classes, our math classes are overlooked.
How?
Because they're so good, right? That they're so good at playing the school game.
Oh yeah,
right. They know what to do. They know how to succeed. They're like, okay, I need to do this. But they're not. I don't know. I don't believe that they're invested in as much as the rest of the students in the class.
Has it? Is there a specific experience that you can call out that you identify with that? Like, if you look back in your Rolodex of being in K-12 or even in
high
college,
school is like that. Most of high school, like, you know, biology, chem, AP bio,
those labs.
Right? Like all those. In high school, it felt like that. I was definitely compliant, and I just did what everyone told me to do, and I'd never participated, even if I knew, because why would I feel compelled to raise my hand and answer the question if I was never shown that that was what I was supposed to do?
Interesting. That's awesome. So then, like, I imagine in your context now, you knowing
never
that,
call on any boys. No, I'm kidding.
I was gonna say,
all the boys are not in my classroom. The boys sit outside. The boys are outside, circle. And the girls
all
are inside.
All those popsicle sticks are over there. Let me get these ones. Sandy.
Those are called equity sticks, sir.
Sorry. They're popsicle sticks, bro.
So, like,
yeah,
how does
do
it?
Why do we call those equity sticks? Stick with
stop
your name.
Right now.
Stop it right now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a popsicle stick with a name on it. So I'd never call on any of the boys. In fact, there are no boys in any of my classes. They remove them all and they put them in a different class.
Super.
Because
they know. Or else they're sitting in the closet.
Listeners, didn't happen. Okay.
Relax.
Take a deep breath. Disclaimer.
There's this room I have in the back of my class where all the lab supplies go. The boys just go sit.
Go sit over there. Go sit by the aquarium, jerk.
Oh, it's a very nice aquarium.
So knowing what you know now, like, seriously, what do you do or what do you teach teachers to do to kind of quell that or to minimize that pretty brown girl syndrome?
I think I know what to do in my class with my kids. I'm not sure if I figured out yet how to disseminate the message, like, hey, teachers, we need to do X, Y, and Z for the brown girls in our science class. But with the girls in my class, I nag them. Like, they're, oh, hey, there's this robotics club. Hey, there's this solar project. Hey, you should join. Oh, I don't know. And I say it to them the next day. Hey, you should join. I think you'd be really good at this because you did really good at that lab. Really? Yeah. Well, I don't know. Bring your friend. Okay. And, like, they're not that hard to convince. If you ask them, like, three times and you say, bring a friend. I'll bring food and... You need community service hours? We can try it. Let's just see what happens. Just try. If you don't like it, it's okay. And then you get them. Like, they show up to the first day of Solar Power Car Club or Robotics Club or anything after school, and that's it. You just keep asking them. And when you look like them, it's not that hard to convince
Holy
them.
Holy shit.
What?
Right?
It is, though. It's like getting to know them and figuring out what they like and then making the hook between what they like and what I need them to do, which is like right. extra science stuff
right.
or extra hands-on inquiry stuff.
Well, so to speak to that, what's maybe something that, because I know there's some teachers who struggle with, everybody has that one student or a few students who you're struggling to identify with or struggling to connect with. What is, over the last 6 years or 5 years that you've been teaching, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever years, what's something that you always go back to try to identify with those students that are struggling or that just you for whatever reason you can't connect with them? What are some strategies that you're employing to get them on board with doing more science shit?
You gotta talk to them in any and not in any sort of school. No, like, just leave school aside. You two are just at, you just happen to be at school together, but you, I don't know. It's a hard thing to teach because it comes very naturally to me because yeah. like my, oh, speaking of the strengths that we, you know, did at our school,
yes,
my
yes.
number one strength is relator. So I don't, it's not hard for me to like just sit and talk and listen. And then I do think though that there's a big piece of if you share you with the kids and how similar you are, that's what gets them to open up to you first. So first, I think that's what it is. You can't just expect them to walk in and open up to you because, you know, they're a brown
open
girl
up to
and
me.
You're a brown teacher.
Shake
like,
my
oh,
hand.
Yeah. Like, it's not
shake
that easy.
My hand.
Yeah.
Stand in a row outside. Shake my hand when you come in and you will identify with me.
Yeah, never
like that?
Shake anybody's hand.
That doesn't work.
You just have to tell them. Tell them who you are. Show them who you are. Show them pictures. Like the first day of school, I only show pictures. We sit in a circle and I show pictures. This is me. This is my family. Nice. These are my grandparents. This is how I got here. Oh, you! Some of you may have got here, though. Like, it's just different. And
that's so dope. Yeah. I've always thought of doing that and just never
pictures.
Done it.
Just pictures.
Wah. 16 years and you haven't done it?
I mean, it's a little scary, right?
It is. It's terrifying. But why? Why is it scary?
It's scary to give them that the power of having information about me.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Why are you afraid of your...
Why?
Why?
Stupid. Turn that shit down. I'm not high yet. That's the high filter. The high filter just goes...
But think about it. Like, they're coming in every day with you and listening to you. Why is it scary for them to know you like you know them? Because you know you know some of them that
absolutely.
Way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the thing with adults is that we're like, oh, we have to be polished and guarded, and I'm coming in as the professional and the educator, and I need to be a certain way because then my kids will be that way. No, they don't give a shit.
They really
just
don't.
Want you to be a human being.
And they want you to care.
And they want you to tell them, hey, you know what? I'm having a bad day today. Hey, you know what? I'm having a great day today. Hey, you know, we're all just here today.
That I do like, share. That's just,
right?
Like, I do share my immediate feelings, but I don't right. share... the background of who I am or who my family is, and that's it's an important question to say why are you scared. It's good, it's good, you got me.
Look at him. He's like reasonable. It's a reasonable
no, it's
reasonable pushback.
But I didn't used to do this in my first year. I came in and I listened to everybody else's advice, which was like, come in and tell them about your experience as a teacher and what you're going to teach them and how prepared you are and how you've planned all summer.
Don't
and
smile until Christmas.
And, you know, but my classroom management has gotten easier because I let go of all of that.
Ooh.
And now it's, hey, who are you? Hey, this is me. Let's find some similarities. We're also different, but let's find some similarities. And then we start there.
It's a trend that we're seeing in this with really, really high level educators. The ones who really focus on like relationships, they have less classroom management issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the most out of their students because now there's this context in which, oh, you're human, I'm human, let's do some awesome shit together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As opposed
and also
to
treating them like humans. Like, why do we come in with this hierarchy? Like, I'm the teacher, you're the student. When I let go of that,
yes.
life got easier.
Yes.
Mm.
I told them, like, I was like, I still visit my parents every weekend. I'm still, when I leave here, I'm still a daughter. I'm still a kid. I still call my parents for advice, just like you do. Like, why do I have to come in and make you feel like I am so much wiser than you? Some of my kids know way more shit about science than I do. And I have to go home and study to prepare for them.
Mm,
you know what I mean? Yeah. But why do I feel like I'm better than you? Because I have a degree? No.
Tight.
I only got my degree because, you know, it was
I need
paid
to get a job.
For me. You know, but like, I got it because my parents helped me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I went through school and did the classes, but financially, I couldn't have done it on my own.
Right.
Without loans and debt and life. Right? Like, I couldn't have been here without my parents. So I'm like, what makes me so... I've been very privileged
yeah.
to say that.
Yeah.
All right, let me pivot and ask you another question here. Since you went there, so how? Just talk to us about.
It's almost break time. It's almost break time for
it. Is are you? Do you have any music queued up?
I do have music queued up.
Oh, but you had a question.
Ask the question, and then we'll go. And then we'll switch over.
Just so you brought up your ethnicity and your heritage. Talk a little about how that plays into just you as an educator.
Okay, it's hard because no one is from where I'm from.
Yeah.
Period.
Okay.
And I haven't had a student that has my background. I haven't had a colleague that has my background. So I'm Indian. I'm from northern Punjab. My grandparents all migrated from India. So my dad's side of the family went India to Fiji to Canada. And my mom's family went India to England to Canada. My parents met in Canada. I was born there, raised there, around an entire Indian community where everyone looked like me, had the same culture as me, was the same religion as me. Like, I went to school and I felt like I'm going to be safe all the time because everyone here is like family. Left all of that, dropped in Oceanside where everyone thought I was Mexican. So I was Alicia Yohal for like 10 years.
Love it.
And until I had this sense of empowerment to be like, I totally appreciate Hispanic culture, but I'm not Mexican.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, fair. I played soccer and no one spoke to me in English. And the coach even, I was like, I don't understand what you're telling us all because I don't know Spanish.
There's nothing.
Atrás.
And I was like, what does that mean?
I feel bad. I feel bad for like, because I know that's not easy to be around.
So, but that's what I tell my kids on the first day. right? It's like, it's hard. I get it. You want people to know you, and sometimes people don't know you. But now, you know, there's still not any, you know, Indian students or teachers at my site. But now I've got this sense of like, okay, I can use my experiences to still support minority girls in science.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so it's one of those things that is probably always going to stay the same. There's not a huge Indian community in San Diego. If I move somewhere else, like to LA or the Bay Area, yeah, I would find them, but I don't think I'm going to find them here.
Crazy. It's so funny. Like, just, I think, you know, that transplanting is such a traumatic experience. And I think when you share that traumatic experience with students, and they, because a lot of them are in fact transplanted as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so they have that same kind of, oh, you did that too.
Yay.
Oh, you did that too. Oh, you did that too. Okay. So then, like, then all the barriers start to fall down and you do the shit that you want to do.
And the language thing is a big piece. I remember last year I had to cover for a class, and it was a bilingual class.
Oh.
That was like, that's what every teacher needs to do. Okay, this is what every teacher that listening needs to do. You need to do class coverage for a bilingual class where you cannot communicate with anyone, and then you see how it feels. Because I was in there, it was nice. 32 students who spoke Spanish. It was science class, still eighth grade. Mm-hmm. Everything was fine. They were like, they were super helpful, and they were teaching me Spanish words and for science and what I was trying to explain. And some of the kids were translating for me to the kids who couldn't speak any English, but for 37 minutes, because I was sweating, because I was like, when is she going to come back? I don't want to do class cover anymore. For 37 minutes, I was in there and very uncomfortable. And teachers need to go there, because that's what our kids do. Why are you both laughing? It's so...
It's just so true, because it's so true. I've done the same thing where it's like,
you need to go in and sit there, and then you see what our students feel like all day. I did it for 37 minutes. What if you had to do that from 8:15 to 3:15?
Every day.
Your anxiety has to be so high when you leave school.
Or just how about just the basic, like, whether you like or dislike school? Like, what is that experience for you?
Right.
It's shitty.
I hated that experience, but I needed that experience, right? So,
That's fucking
homework
dope
for everybody.
So, that's the takeaway. So, as we go into break, everybody set up your classroom schedules for next year.
And cover one SEI class, or bilingual class.
Yeah.
A quick break in queue for the podcast is Nathan Fletcher, local candidate for San Diego County Board of Supervisors. As of the posting of this podcast here, August 28th, we've now been in session for a month. Alicia dropped a sweet gem on them Twitters when she announced that instead of explaining her syllabus at open house, she had parents write words of encouragement to their children that she would drop on them when she felt they needed it most. So much dedication and passion. Some people just got it like that. So her Twitters then blew up, and I'd like this episode to be her SoundCloud. Educated guests, search us up as one word wherever you listen to A1 Podcasts. Let's get back up into this episode, y'all. Educated guests, episode 32.
Our special guest today, Alicia Johal, from Marvis Academy by way of Canada. And we had a good conversation about just what it's like being a teacher, right? And you were talking about a little bit about being not burnt out, but I don't know if burnt out is fully the term. There's frustrations that we get when you invest so much time and energy into stuff. I'm curious to find out, like, what a high-level teacher like yourself, what is it that just kind of puts you over the edge? Like, what is it that... Because if I'm an administrator, I'm trying to do my job to make you as happy as possible, because I know that whatever you do, you're going to impact kids and it's going to be amazing. So I'm trying to support you. But if I'm an administrator who's fucking up, what is it that they're doing to not support you?
Hmm.
And that the reason I'm asking that is because I'm sure that there's a bunch of teachers trying to get you to talk shit. Not really. I'm saying, like, there's a bunch of teachers out there who are not being supported by their administrators. How can we coach them up either to work with administrators or administrators to not fuck it up?
Okay. So it's the same thing you do with your students.
Ooh, tell me more.
Right? You get to know your students so that you can prepare them to succeed. So you find out that they love Fortnite, so you make your lesson have something to do with Fortnite. You know that they love watching makeup videos on Instagram. So you make sure you incorporate that into your lesson. You know your students and what they like and where they want to go or what they're interested in. Administrators should do the same thing for their teachers. Get to know your teachers. What do they like? What are they interested in? So that when those opportunities come to their desk, because they get like tons of mail, tons of emails. Oh, we have this, we have that. Figure out who are the teachers on your site that are passionate about specific things. And then you disseminate that information because you know your teachers.
Keep poking at the bear.
Yes, what, do it.
What is our district doing right?
To support teachers. To support teachers.
No, no, no. Just in general. What do you like about our district? Because I know I like certain things. I'm asking you. What do you like?
I like how big our district is. Because my network of teachers is large. Like, I feel like I have... Like, if I walked onto any of Sweetwater's campuses, I would know of at least two or three teachers that I would want to go and observe and watch teach.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's solid because we are so many. Like, we are a lot of teachers. And you know, you hear about the good teachers. You hear about where they are. You're like, I want to come see you.
Yeah.
So that's probably my favorite thing is, like, the networking and the professional sort of everything that happens when you have such a large district.
Okay.
That's probably my first favorite thing.
And then keep poking. What what might the district do better?
Ooh,
I'm not trying to get you to say something that's going to get you in trouble.
No, I know.
And anything that is.
Snip. It doesn't even. So yeah.
I want to feel of like what's the thing that would impact my classroom? That's what I'm thinking. Like, what can the district do so that my 8:15 to 3:15 job is better than it already is?
Okay.
So I would say I want more opportunities to develop professionally as a teacher. I don't want to be told, hey, Alicia, you should become an administrator. I've heard that too many times. Ooh. I want to be the best science teacher that like walked into Mar Vista Academy. I need to find out who they are outside of our district. I need to go to more conferences. I need the experts brought into Sweetwater to come and watch me teach and say, Alicia, this is what you fix, X, Y, and Z. That's what
okay.
I want.
Okay.
So, I want to learn and grow.
So you
and I'm not as much as I used to. Right now.
So professional development's huge.
Huge.
So how do you feel about missing the classroom for professional development?
Depending on how often, I think it's okay, right? Like, you don't want to be out every week. But I would give up time to go and learn how to be a better teacher if I was coming back to my kids.
Because right? ultimately it comes back.
Right.
Because I do feel like the best conferences I've gone to, I came back and I changed stuff on Monday. The standards-based grading, the master-based grading. Mm-hmm. I heard it on the weekend. I was like, I'm going to try this on Monday with my sixth period class. Let's just see. Like, right. And that's what good PD is, right? Yeah. Like, it
the forces you shit, to stop. I'm going to run a Kojin tomorrow.
Seriously,
let's go.
Seriously, I did, right? It was amazing. Like, there's stuff that I still haven't implemented that I have like a book of notes from his book and his PD. So I'm like, I need to try this stuff. So I feel like what I'm missing right now as a teacher going into her sixth year is I need more professional development around what's a good teaching. What's good science teaching in California? Mm. What's good science teaching to language learners? Someone come in and teach us, or let us come to you and watch you, or you watch us and just pick the shit out of our lesson and tell us, hey, fix this, and then you're good. Like, I miss that.
So you miss the coaching.
Yeah. Coaching is necessary and forever. Like, why? Everyone was in my classroom in my first 2 years.
Yeah, Candace, my wife Candace was just talking about, she did a job interview at a charter school in LA, and one of the things that they were very adamant about was like the level of coaching that you would get if you joined the organization. And it's very much like, you know, your peers are coaching you, the admin's coaching you, like everybody's on a continuous cycle of just coaching, and just continuously getting better. I think... A lot of times in our district and in big districts, it's not like that because they haven't figured out how to do it effectively at scale.
Right.
Right. And so they can try to do it at one school site but I think the propensity of district leaders is to, you're a great teacher. We're going to take you out of the classroom. We're going to make you an administrator, and we're going to hope that you can pass on what you did in the classroom to these other teachers who've never seen you teach. Who have no idea of no context of what the real nuance is or the magic is that, of you being in the classroom. And that theory of change just does not work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not proven. It's not, there's no data around it. So what do we do next? right? And that's what I'm very interested in, is like, how do we improve instruction and teaching and learning for our teachers, but in a different way? Because what we've been doing for the last X amount of years, whatever it is it promoting people from within, and then it doesn't work.
Right.
So how do we do that? I mean, what would be, what do you think would be most beneficial, other than the, like, who would you want to coach you? Would it be experts from outside the field, or who, other teachers, or what's something that you would want? Like, who would you want coaching you?
I don't know if I can come up with like a name like this person, but I do feel like it's a district's responsibility to know that, hey, if we don't have that peace within us, we need to go and find it for our teachers, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so
yeah,
we're in our, for example, science, right? We're in our fifth year teaching the Next Generation Science Standards. So we kind of jumped on board, we implemented early, and from what I know in the state of California, like Oakland Unified is where we're at, right? And so they post all their stuff online, so I look at all the stuff that they're doing. But like, why not meet with them and say like, how far have you gotten in 4 years, right? And like, this is how far we've gotten in 4 years. What's worked out for you? What's not worked out for you? Like, everyone's just doing everything in silos, like, yep, these massive districts. I'm like, Oakland Unified has posted every lesson and every activity and everything they're doing in science. And I don't think they know that it's all accessible online for anyone, but
it's
awesome, because I've gone in and I'm like, oh, this is how they're teaching that phenomena. This is how they're engaging the kids. But like, how valuable to just sit, you know, 10 Oakland Unified teachers and 10 Sweetwater teachers. And, you know, hey, you guys are all on the leading edge of NGSS, and talk for a day, and we'll pay for you to talk for a day, and whatever comes out of it comes out of it, and that's it. Like, that's where the real authentic stuff comes, right?
District office, are you listening?
high five.
Are you listening?
No, because the only, like, again, like, the theory of change that everybody has is so off base, and they're going to try to find reasons to not do that. And they're going to say, well, we can't pay for you to go up to Oakland. We can't pay for Oakland to come down here. We can't do this. We can't. And it's so much, like, stop momentum that it takes someone who the superintendent has asked to do a keynote to kind of ask to do that stuff to really kind of make it happen. So hopefully that kind of changes.
Yeah, it would be awesome. I would love to spend like a day with teachers who are where we're at in science teaching.
Right.
You know, like, because it is brand new stuff and everyone is learning. So yeah, that's what I need.
I love
that. That is what I need.
I think that's a great place to kind of like explore what professional development looks like.
Yeah, because we just think conferences when we think PD.
Yeah.
But why can't we just have, like, what are they called? Think tanks, right? You just sit like this. Sit around a table.
Think and drinks,
right? And just sit and talk. Because I feel like my best engaging lessons came out of, like, just random conversations on campus, not when we're sitting together trying to make a lesson plan.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I saw you at passing period. Did you notice the kids like this thing? And yeah, let's do that tomorrow. Okay, perfect.
One of the things that we've been talking about in some of our circles has been like this idea of just giving. It's never been about like teachers. It's not that they don't want to be the best. It's not that they don't, you know, there's no desire there. It's they don't have enough time to work with the people next to them, just in an and it doesn't have to be so structured, because the first thing the teachers are going to do is just kind of talk about what's personally happening with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then once they get that out of the way, then they can start talking about, but if you don't create those spaces and those opportunities for those people to do that, then that's where the water cooler talk happens.
Yeah.
Right? Because now we're trying to get all that stuff out, and oh, well, Johnny was such a dick during third period and I don't know how to handle it, blah, 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 blah. And that's, all that stuff can be mitigated if you give teachers more time to talk.
Right.
The other thing I think is that we don't do as a district, or your district doesn't do very well, is the planning for PLCs. It shouldn't be after school. That stuff should be happening before school, because there is actually adequate data that shows that if you spend before school time planning, you're more focused on the planning than you are complaining about what happened during third period with your students.
I want to pivot.
I like
underwater robotics. Why is it underwater?
That's a high question. That's a super high question. That's a cannabis.
What are they doing underwater? The robots.
We have special effects, folks.
Are they like fighting each other underwater? Are they like diving to the bottom of the pool and picking something up and bringing it back up?
Yes, the
okay.
second one.
Okay, cool.
Think of your submarine. The average military submarine. Is that the Navy? Who has submarines? Army, Navy, Marines.
And somebody asked you to do that?
I'm Canadian. And it's what's the army that... what's the branch of the military that has the submarines and the...
Navy. That'd be the Navy.
Yeah, Navy.
The Navy.
That'd be the Navy.
They swim.
So
yeah, how did you get involved with that? How do you like yeah, it? So why that?
I got them through a grant four
okay.
years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
So they San Diego had this initiative. It was called the Exploring STEM Careers Initiative, where they trained teachers how to build robots so that we could then take them back to the classroom and teach kids how to make them. So how to make them, how to modify them, how to race them. And then so now we have this big competition in San Diego, where multiple schools compete. So this year we had like 60 schools compete in San Diego, and then they compete with different obstacles underwater. So they have to like go through hula hoops, they have to pick up objects. And then this year we had our very first Sweetwater underwater robotics competition, which was super cool. We had 7 middle schools there. And so that's our new thing, is that we'll start to do it in-house and then participate outside in the county competitions too.
I saw that on social media. How'd you guys
shout
fare?
Out to Leo Yua for helping out with that, or not really, or was that all you?
That's all Alicia Johal.
Sweet.
It was Leo and I, and he had a
bounce.
He had a
prior engagement.
No, damn, he was son. There. No, I couldn't have done it without Leo because he wanted to take it district wide. So Leo saw what I was doing with my school. Saw me at a competition last year at the county and said, how do we do this in Sweetwater? And I said, this is how. And he said, let's make it happen. And then he made it happen.
Yeah.
He's a real one.
I love Leo in that sense, in a lot of senses. Mm-hmm. But he's always been one to kind of be like, let's do it. How do we do this?
He's bigger, yes, man.
Bigger,
he never
bigger better.
No.
Yeah, yep. Bigger, better. How do we do it more?
Who are your favorite people to follow on Twitter as far as education goes?
You should follow... Well, the hashtag.
Yes. So talk who should? So who should I? What hashtag should I follow?
You should follow the EduColor hashtag.
EduColor.
I've seen that.
EduColor is a group hashtag. That I sort of started following very early on my first year teaching, because it's all educators of color talking about life as an educator of color, and they are definitely a group that's doing the work in the classroom, out of the classroom, every day. All day. And so and they're just a great sounding board. Like, I've been able to reach out for them. It's like, hey, I'm having this problem, like how can I enter this conversation with a colleague. And you have people who've been doing this work for like 30 40 50 years that know how to manage school spaces when they're the only teacher of color on their campus, you know, or a teacher of their background on their campus. And so they are I've learned so much. And so if you follow the EduColor hashtag, you'll see all the people behind the EduColor hashtag, and you just follow.
Yeah.
And they just give you some great perspectives on, you know, not only how to, you know, have these critical conversations in the classroom around race, around equity and whatever, but they're just brilliant, and they're just good human beings that I feel like their mission is just to teach others, you know, cool. and be open and be honest. And I was a little more involved before than I am now, but I still am a big, big supporter. And they actually have a monthly Twitter chat. I think it's like the third Thursday or something every month. But if you follow their Twitter page or follow their hashtag, you'll see it. And they get into good conversations.
So as we
at the main
transition
stage.
Out of this episode 32 of the Educated Guest Podcast, I tweeted out a picture of you earlier before we recorded of you holding up a sign with the hashtag Why I Teach. Talk about why you teach.
I teach to provide access, to provide hope, and to provide support for kids who normally would not get it in our public school system. Mm.
She's a good friend of mine, and I'm glad that I can call her the homegirl, and we can have her at the crib having some Crown and Coke.
And quesadillas.
Three different kinds of salsas and guacamole dipping.
Where can everybody find you at again?
at Alicia Johal.
Is there anything, any takeaway that you want to give, or anything that you want?
One last takeaway
from the.
To give to the listeners?
To give to the listeners, or if there's an ask, like one thing that you implore them to do, and then one ask, like just selfishly, if they could all follow you, all 20 of them will follow you, I'm sure, but like, what?
I think the only takeaway is, it's important to remember that even if you're tired, the work is necessary, the work is important, and that you need to find like-minded educators, like these two gentlemen right here, who will sit and have the hard conversations so that you feel refreshed, so that you feel like you can go back another year. So don't stop if you're tired, but you need to reach out and ask for help if you're tired as a teacher.
Really quickly, I'm just gonna ask, was I of any benefit to you as a new teacher? Because I'm just going to totally fish for a compliment right now.
He's exiting the district, everybody. I'm gone
from the district. Was I of any use to you?
Yes, you pushed back on everything that you ever saw happening in my classroom. You said, why don't you do it like this? And I was like, I thought I finally fucking got this lesson planning thing down as a first-year teacher. But it's good, but you need that, right? You need that collegial support of people who will push back, or who will validate you, or who will stretch your thinking a little bit. And that's what gets you out of like the tired spaces.
Yeah.
You know, that's what helps you. Otherwise, you get stuck there. And then you become bitter. And you know,
resentment fills in.
Yeah, so I think it's important to surround yourself with people who will push you, who will question you as a teacher, people who aren't afraid to have the harder conversations, and then people who just like, they just love you. They're like, yeah, I know it's hard, so let me just help you.
All right, so needed. Episode 32 of the Educated Guest podcast. Are you going to take us out with some funky music?
Oh,
do you have something queued up for our awesome episode with Miss Alicia Johal?
Not yet. But you got to fill it in.
I got to fill it in.
Fill it in with, do I get one of these Educated Guest stickers?
Absolutely.
Oh, you got some left?
I got you.
We're a tough crowd here.
Yeah, we're a hip-hop crowd.
Yeah. This is how we're going to end it.
That's fair.
On some J. Cole.
First things first. Rest in peace, Uncle Phil.
That's
for
right.
real.
He's good.
First things first. Rest in peace, Uncle Phil.
I'll take it. All right, y'all. Thank you so much.
Alicia Johal, thank you for your time, your ideas. You love teaching the children, and that's why you are on the podcast today. Episode 32. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Keep doing it for the babies.
High fives. That's right. High fives again.
That's right. We love the babies.
High fives. Who should we get on next? Pedro Nogueira? Yeah, we should do that, huh? We're going to do it. First things first, rest in peace, sucker fair. For real. All right, man.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. It was so good. So good.
And we out.
Thank you.